Welcome back to Brass Stacks, and I'd just like to read this WhatsApp message I have here. When an economy contracts, it is not an academic matter. It is not a political matter. It is a real world matter because real people suffer. And those who suffer first, who suffer most, who suffer longest, are the very old, the very poor, and mostly the very, very young, those who have no voice. Very well said. You're on the air. Good morning.
Sanka?
Yes, it is.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. I've been off this program for quite a while. So here I am now.
Okay. Dennis brought you back, right?
Well, morning, Dennis, again. But having listened to yesterday's report, which only presented to me anguished but not surprising reading, Sanka, the overall fact is that the current government has managed Barbados very poorly over the last 10 years. You said they tried their best, but essentially their best was not good enough. That is what you said just now. If a person's best is not good enough, you know, it's like if you have an employee who says, but you know, sir, I tried my best, but you got them, but it hasn't been good enough. You know, essentially you have failed. The Prime Minister is quoting today's paper as saying that they have served Barbados well over the last 10 years. Well, I beg to differ. That, to quote him, is poppycock, nonsense, balderdash, and rubbish. You know, he said they have kept Barbados stable, but to ensure that those basic amenities to which Barbadians have become accustomed were made available to them on an uninterrupted basis. Now, you see, that may be true, but managing a country is about balance. And sometimes, like a family, like a business, you have to make tough decisions. You cannot, to use an off-use term, you can't keep kicking the can down the road all the time. How long did they plan to keep kicking the can down the road while the country suffers and suffers and suffers and suffers? Yesterday's report by the Governing Central Bank was no surprise. I mean, we should have expected this, and you know what? They should have expected it. They knew it. You know, once the Prime Minister said, Barbados is still here, but you know what, Sanka? Haiti is still here too. Chad, Sierra Leone, Jamaica, still here. And the sun is still shining in those places. So to tell me the sun's shining, the bus is running, and people going to work in them places too. But the economy is the overall most important thing. So to tell us as a political statement started by David Thompson that Barbados is not only economy, it is a society, really and truly, Sanka, tells me nothing. Because Chad in Africa is a society too. And so is Haiti. They all have societies. But when the economy is poor, we all suffer. Am I wrong?
Well, that's self-evident.
But that's the point. This is why I say it is self-evident. It tells me nothing. It's a nothing statement. Because if you don't have the economy going right, you don't have the money to provide the social services that you would like to provide. It's as simple as that. So to me, the current government acts as though the economy does not matter. If you have six so-called homegrown plans that have, by their own admission, have not worked, then that should tell the Barbadian public something. You know, you can't just wrap it all up and say, it's more the economy, it is a society. So to me is their campaign strategy going forward? You know, instead of telling us what they have done and what they intend to do, by the way, we want what you intend to do. They spend time asking Miss Motley and the BLP, tell us what you're all going to do. No. I want what you're going to do. In light of this last report yesterday, I want to know what the current government would do should they be re-elected to office. That's what I want to know. You know, because you can't simply put another plan on the table, which both the union and the private sector have reservations about, I might add. right?
No. Let me clarify that. Isn't that they have reservations about it? They're saying basically it is no plan. Because you have what it is a list of things that need to be done. I wrote the story, so I should know.
Yeah.
There's a list of things that need to be done, and they have to meet to decide on the prioritize what has to be done and go into looking at the measures that will make these things possible. So what the government actually has, therefore, is a framework from which they now have to sit down and work together with all the other stakeholders on the way forward.
So in other words,
in fact, you would notice that after Mr. Herbert spoke, because I did it with him, and then Tony Moore spoke from the BWU, you have not really been hearing the government talking much about that plan in any major way. They backed off of saying it was the plan thereafter.
Right.
You would recognize that. Okay.
Okay. So therefore, there's no plan really. It's a list of things.
I would not want to say
it's a list of things. But you do agree the other so-called plans have not worked. Six plans.
But I don't have to agree with that. And hold a second.
It's
on page five of the governor's press release that was issued yesterday, second paragraph on page five, he says, "Our efforts to date have not resulted in bringing the fiscal deficit to a manageable level." Okay? That's what the governor says.
Right. Essentially, therefore, right? He also stated, Sanka, that government cannot continue to finance the deficit. They can't. And he said external funding is required. External funding. Am I wrong? That's what he said. So therefore, when people talk about the IMF, they can carry them to the IMF and they can lay off people and they can this and that. A serious decision has to be made. I don't care who come back in, who gets reelected, right? You, the IMF, and I agree with Marla Ducoran. The IMF is not the organization that it used to be. And I say, look at Grenada, look at St. Kitts, because we Barbadians apparently like to think that we are above everybody else and we're this wonderful country. Yes, we were. We were this wonderful country. We no longer are. That's where we are now. Sadly, I feel very sad saying so, you know, Tanker. But we no longer are. So we now need to get funding from somewhere. And people need to be honest. Stop these scare tactics nonsense. People need to be honest with themselves and with the voters. You can't say, you know, they can carry Barbados to the IMF. We gotta go to somebody. Are we gonna get another Credit Suisse loan and pay it through our brains? I could say somewhere else, but use brains.
All right, so you think, you want to make a last point before you go?
No, I just want to say, look, we need some honesty in this election coming up. We have this report as a basis, and stop pointing fingers and say what you honestly intend to do, but we cannot keep kicking the can down the road and talking foolishness. Thank you, Sanka. Nice talking to you. Have a nice day.
You too, sir. And we have a lot of calls, so let me go straight back to the phone lines. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Morning, Sanka. How are you this morning?
I am fine, thank you, sir. And you?
And I'm fine.
Good.
I want to reply to the central governor's report, bank's report. What I am saying is what the central bank governor would have said. It really ain't surprised me, but it should say it all, Barbadians, that right now where but this country is, it is in the intensive unit on life support. And I believe strongly now that the way forward is whoever comes to government after this general election. They have in front of them, they have to look at some things and come up with some words and put some things for them, things like analysis. Then the analysis out of there, you've got to try and get confidence and all these things. Because what I'm seeing from his report, that we need now, whoever gets there has to have a critical analysis of this country's economy. Look at it in a way that they can lump it together look to get some money from somewhere or the other where they can have it and have this, the one debt, which will be consolidated. And out of that, you got to look at confidence, because you have to get the confidence of the business people back again. And most of all, you have to get the confidence of the people of your country, which means that whoever formed the government cannot do like this one. They have to come to the people, fight, explain where we are, what we are, what we have to do, and let there be a conversation in trying and build this country all over again.
Let me ask you two questions, okay?
Yes.
Well, I agree with everything you've said. I just have two questions. Should they not be doing all that analysis now, so that they can talk to the public and let the public know what they plan to do?
No.
In other words, hold a second. The point I'm trying to make here is this. I mean, people have their choice of whoever they're going to vote for, and that is your right. But I would think that you need, as a voter, as a Barbadian who's concerned about the future of the country, I think that you need to be asking the people who come around campaigning, what do you plan to do to make this country better, to make my life as a citizen who pays taxes here better.
Right. And the that generations mu- they
that
should come.
That must be critical going forward. Okay, that's the first thing. You also then made about the second point, which I totally forgot. I'm really getting old.
I didn't
make a note of it. But I guess it'll come back to me. But to my mind, that is one of the most critical things. Oh, yes, it just came back. You said that the new government company can't do like this one. But I put it to you, and I put it to everyone who is of the view that there will be a change of government. Let's assume that this Democrat Liberal Party is returned to office, because they can return to office. Okay?
So if the
Democratic Liberal Party returns to office, what would you want them to do in the future after May 25th onwards that they have not done now, that they have not been doing since 2008?
Now, let me answer the first part of your question.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk about looking at things, I don't believe that the persons know that you're coming around and canvassing. When you ask me what I am going to do now after listening to the governor of the central bank, I believe that it is when I get there, I can tell you now what I would like to do or what I am seeing, because I am on the outside. I am not there. But when I get there now, is where I we may be able to do that critical analysis and realize, but you know, I said I can do so and so, but now it just presents itself. So that is why I'm saying that whenever it's finished.
But I disagree with you totally.
There needs to be dialogue.
But I disagree with you totally, and I will tell you why I disagree with you totally. Okay, right now, you have the Barbados Liberal Party is. And the constant thing, because I had Minister Innes in here on Sunday, and the point was that he was making, as others have made, is you want to get rid of the NSRL. How can you get rid of the NSRL if the NSRL is bringing in so much revenue and the country is in need of so much revenue? How can you get rid of that? How will you replace it? Something has to give. It doesn't make sense. Okay? Now, all I'm saying to you is that if somebody from the Barbados Liberal Party comes around, you should be able to ask that. And if you can't ask that, but then you know you don't want to hear the answer. You see, all I'm saying to you as a potential voter is if we go to what Solutions Barbados is saying, they're saying, look, we are going to eliminate the NSRL. We are going to reduce the value-added tax. Or reduce it? Or, yeah, I think reduce the value-added tax as well. That is what they are saying. The point about it is that they have told you what you want to do. You now have the economic report from the governor of the central bank saying, look, we in deep doo-doo. Right. They know we're getting wrong. Our feet, our hands, our knees, we're right up to our chest, we in this thing. Right. And there's no easy way out. So all I'm saying to you is that as members of the public who want to vote, you need to ask yourself those questions. You also need to ask yourself, okay, and this is for the people who are in part of the ruling, the Democratic Liberal Party. If you were in power for 10 years, the country has come to this level under your management, what can you do any differently that will improve things? All right? So all I'm saying is that these are the sort of questions that we need to start to ask, because we have to be balanced. For those who are still not sure, those are the sort of questions that they need to ask. We're going to take a commercial break. It was great talking to you. We'll talk to you again next time. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. We have on the line Mr. Glenn Murray.
And I also want to join the other listeners in expressing my pleasure, and I'm sure your comfort, in having Dennis back with you. Stabilizing influence. He's your IMF if you have problems with callers.
That's very true.
Yes, Anka. I just, I'd like to comment on a number of things, but like, I start off by, as to be expected, the economy and the central bank governor's latest report, which, as long as one were following things closely in Barbados, both in reportage and also in living conditions and events, then nothing would have happened to have expected a different kind of report. That said, it means that, and that have been expected, the situation with that report, maybe you would know better than me, I can't recall that nature of report coming on the eve of Farris in the midst or at the beginning of a national general election campaign. So this is a different ballgame. No, they used to come, I think, before or after, but I cannot recall coming.
Usually after.
So I mean, this now changed the whole context, and it should change the whole nature of the debate, where because of the report and the authenticity of the report and the legitimacy of the report or the authority of the report, people should indulge in less speculation, because you have a report that we can go on to judge things. And that means that given the nature of the report, I think all the political parties, especially the Barbados Labour Party, the Democratic Labour Party, it is not incumbent upon them, as far as I'm concerned, to state explicitly a number of things, what they were, the number of burning issues based on the report and what Ms. Dukeran said there, what you said and people are saying. One of the most glaring examples is, are you going to go to the IMF? If so, why? If not, why not? If you're going to go, what kind of program you're going to go? And I think this should be stated. It should begin to be talked about from the beginning of the campaign, the spoken campaign, as the launches of the campaign meetings. And also should be, by the time the manifesto comes about, by the time each manifesto is printed and published and distributed, it should contain what they intend to do about the situation vis-a-vis the IMF, etc. So that the public can compare and contrast and see which one they prefer.
Maybe just breaking here, Glenn, I'll tell you though that I think both parties, both the Democratic Liberal Party and the Barbados Liberal Party, have talked about a homegrown program. The Democratic Liberal Party has been talking about a homegrown program for a while. And the last time they were talking, when they were looking at the last plan that I mentioned earlier, that was just a framework, they have been talking about looking at that homegrown program, because they were pushing it as a plan. Well, I remember the Barbados Liberal Party talking about a homegrown plan as well. But as Ms. Dukeran pointed out, you know, you can have a homegrown you can call it a homegrown program, but basically at the end of the day, it's financed by the International Monetary Fund.
Oh, okay. If they want to cripple, if they want to cripple an indulgent sophistry, the point is, in one form or another, whether you call it homegrown or homegrown, plus or come IMF, you need to go to IMF to get the money you need as a short-term measure.
Yep.
The key about the IMF is when you go, at what condition of your situation you're going, because mm-hmm. that determines the severity of anything which you will have to choose mm-hmm. to implement if you want their money and their assistance. And like has been pointed out, I think, by Prime Minister, former Prime Minister after that, Barbados, as a legitimate member of IMF, is entitled to special drawing rights.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, I think, 3 or 5 or 6 times the amount of money you have in your special drawing rights mm-hmm. at a very low interest rate, something like 2%. So if they can come up with a better, if anybody can come up with a better deal than that, but they must tell the public and don't leave for people to just, and don't dipsy-doodle and talk around it because this is confrontation time.
But Glenn, and I think this is a time here that and I think you're an excellent person here to engage this with. In 2013, Mr. Arthur, to his credit, and you know what I think of Wayne Arthur already, to his credit, was trying to have a mature conversation with the public. I remember well, Mr. Chris Sinclair was speaking to Peter Wickham. I was driving down Deacon's Road going to the office at the time. And Mr. Sinclair was saying that there is no philosophical difference
right.
in the Democratic Labour Party's perspective on the state-owned corporations, you know?
Right.
And what you found after is that they were able to change, well, not change, but to spin that, to make it seem that the Barbados Labour Party were the ones who were pushing this whole divestment idea. And then, of course, we know it ended up with the whole thing with the bus and with the old lady.
Right.
But the whole point about it is that since that time, very little, if anything, in fact, nothing concrete as far as I know, I'm aware, has been done. So that now we come to a situation in 2018 where you still have that problem that was there in 2013 that Mr. Arthur was talking about.
I just heard that that is all part of the general problem, but the general problem still has to be tackled.
Why I'm making that point, Glenn, is following on what you're saying about having this conversation. Are these political parties now with the personalities involved in them? Do you think the people are mature enough and ready enough, or is the public ready enough to have this mature conversation? Because Mr. Arthur tried to have that mature conversation, and it didn't work.
Agree, but I don't think it's a question of much maturity in the sense of particular experience. I think it has been intellectually and professionally equipped to do it. In the final analysis, ideas run country. And if you recall, I know you're a man who does his research. We are back in March 2014. I wrote 2 pieces in the Sun, stating that in future, any minister of finance should be a trained economist. In the same way that the Attorney General, as mandated by the Constitution, has to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, any minister of finance in Barbados in the future, because first of all, we produce enough economists every year from CAEFL that they have to be some good economists around. Should be enough around. And secondly, the economy is too complex and too fast moving to be able to wait and dilly-dally and wait for a brief and consultation. You have to be a minister for, has to be able to, while you would depend on other people's advice and information, you have to have an immediate appreciation after a period of time of what is going on so you can begin to formulate your thoughts. And if you're not trained, how do you decide between different sets of advice given? It's 3 different economists give you 3 different sets of advice. On what basis do you make a decision? If you're not trained in the fundamentals, in the principles of the field to make it understood. I thought one of your earlier callers did the field of economics a great disservice by you for in terms of some disparaging term. What was it exactly? Maybe I shouldn't even repeat to remind the public.
Don't repeat it because that is the sort of uninformed comments that you get, the logic that you get. But one thing's for sure, and I'm going to continue to make your argument, but one thing that we all do know for sure is that if the Democratic Labour Party wins the government and you have anything to do with it, Mr. St. Clair will not be the next minister for finance.
That's right. I think history has proven it. History has proven it because, you know, in that article, I made reference to a quotation by the late Dr. Martin Luther King, which he said, quote, "There is nothing more dangerous in this world than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." I repeat, there's nothing more dangerous in this world than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. I'm not stupid because a person is stupid, but we are all stupid. We are all ignorant of things in other fields in which we are not trained, in which we have no knowledge. I mean, like you said, when you were defending governments and their role and how they approach things, no minister or person seeks deliberately to be unpopular. And I believe that Mr. Sinclair believes and sincerely believes that what he was doing was right, and he was pursuing the right policy. But it has not worked out. So therefore, we have to move past that now and accept that it has not worked out, and we have to move on. But before I close this point, you mentioned Mr. Arthur's intervention about basically what was called the privatization issue in 2013. At that time, his argument was not backed by anything published by the Central Bank or the University of SC or the CDB or whatever. This was a politician, therefore a subject that's kind of spin that one would not dare expect person to seek to do with an authoritative report that can report the Central Bank. This time, the mess that we're in is buttressed by the words of the Central Bank governor. And I must say, I commend the Central Bank governor. He even looks like a governor. This is like a governor, right? He behaves like a governor. I want to commend him for his performance so far.
Yes.
But that, you know, so I say that I think we have to, so I am expecting that by the time the manifestos are published, no party should have any excuse of why they should have an explicit plan for what they propose, what they propose to do as going to IMF or not going to IMF. I remember Mr. Sinclair said, last words he said, I can remember him saying on the IMF, is that they would go, but that would require a mandate from the people. So if he's going to ask for a mandate, if the DLP is going to ask for a mandate for the person to go to IMF, let us hear from them what that mandate will incur, and let us say what they will do if they're given the mandate to go. What kind of program? Standby, structural adjustment, spell it out so that we cannot leave anybody guessing at this time.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And on the other score, like you said, the campaign is not really heating up in earnest. And the first serious public meeting, I'd like to say, of the campaign will take place on Saturday. You said, like you said, launch of the Barbados Labour Party's campaign at Weymouth. First of all, launching of a campaign is usually regarded as serious undertaking based on my experience and being part of launching of several for the Barbados Labour Party. And therefore, every little thing about it is taken seriously. The location you choose. I see the Barbados Labour Party, as is their right. I'm not even a member. Never was. I never had a membership card. But it's their right to choose where they want to go. But I see that they have gone away from the traditional Bay Street launch to Weymouth. Quite right. You try new things. I'm sure that is justifiable reason. But what I find peculiar and interesting is that launching of campaigns were usually taken as a serious indication to make serious political statements and comments and speeches to give people an undertaking of where you propose to take the country and the party and the citizens and whatnot. But from what I've heard, based on the new radio ads, I've heard several mentions of lots of entertainers, Administrator Biggie, Ari, etc. And they come and be added to be inspired by them. Inspired by entertainers? I thought you were supposed to be inspired by your political and religious and social and other leaders. And so therefore, I'm wondering, therefore, what would be the context of that VMF venue? There's so much entertainment. Is it entertainment? Is it going to be the music launch of the campaign, or is it the launch of the campaign as has been known in the traditional sense? And I remember in the 2013 campaign, there was a music festival, a concert at Hager Hall. Thousands of persons were there, right? And it did not inure to the benefit of the Barbados Labour Party. And that's because in general, I'm not strong on music as an integral part of winning people's hearts. The music and campaign songs play a role in getting a message out and keeping it in tune and creating a certain mood and whatnot. But, and I say that based on hard experience. In 1997, the BLP had a music festival on Deacon's pasture during the by-election of 1997, which was won by Clyde Maskell. And what happened? That is a reminder for somebody being stabbed to death at the thing. In 2008, there was insistence by some persons in the Barbastro Party on having a music festival, a music concert at Watson Pasture. 2008 did not benefit the BLP, at least not at the polls. And in 2013, like I said, it was the mammoth undertaking that was held at Hagar Hall. So I wait to see how much entertainment, how much politicking there will be at this event. Because I remember at Hagar Hall, certainly persons were not encouraged to make hard or long or serious political speeches where you can get your serious message across. So I look forward to that. And I also look forward to the launching of the BLP's manifesto, which again is usually a major highlight of the campaign. You build your campaign towards your launch of your manifesto, and then you're supposed to climax or your final meeting or there or thereabout. That is the traditional approach. Maybe things have changed since my time. But I know again that the usual spot over the last several years has been launching at Eagle Hall. Eagle Hall Post Office, outside Eagle Hall Post Office. Mm-hmm. Maybe that will change, but I look forward to seeing.
But what about the Dems launch? We want to say anything about that, or you don't know enough about that?
I know. They're meeting. Yeah, I'll say something about that. Of course I'll say something about that. They're launching their campaign on, again, like I said, venue is very instructive. It helps to set the context in. It should indicate the context in which you're going, if you're meeting at least, if not your campaign. They are launching outside the National Stadium on Sunday, I think at 6:30, which is interesting. I've never known them to launch a campaign there before.
But they're going. They seem to be going after the jugular of Miss Motley.
Obviously, it shows the intent to go for the jugular of the lady, obviously, in the midst of her constituency.
Precisely.
It probably indicates the vigor and the rigorousness with which they will prosecute the Barbados Labour Party. But
Prime Minister did promise to explain Miss Motley.
Well, the Prime Minister said he would, yes. And and so that should make that. But I thought it's interesting the venue they chose, and that would help. You remember the famous meeting at Hagar Hall by David Thompson? That was a different kind of venue for the checks, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all part of strategy. It's all part of the theatrics and the theater and high flyer acts that are as part of a political campaign to keep the public's mind interested. But my last point would be that in a campaign is also influenced not only by music, but by these speakers. Because Parliament, for whom you are choosing representative, is about speaking. The French word parler, to speak. Parler meant, to speak a main thing. Okay? So therefore, speaking is an asset and a serious indication as to the abilities of persons politically, persuasively, which is what political speeches are meant to do, persuade, guide, inspire, bring along something, cajole something, sometimes chastise, but they're meant to inspire people, to inform them, etc. And I therefore am looking forward to the speakers because as I look across the spectrum of potential speakers, as I look across the 30 candidates, these are the persons I would like to hear, that I would be prepared to go to hear. And except when it was bunged up by activists at the Barbados Labour Party in their campaigns, I used to determine which meetings I go to, and so with friends of mine, by the speakers at the particular venue. Because in the same way you go to a cricket match, depending on who's playing in the cricket team. So therefore, I look forward to hearing, these are my drawing cards to the public, the best speakers for each party that I would want to go to hear. Joseph Attlee for the Barbados Labour Party. And you can put them in whatever order you want. Joseph Attlee, Dale Marshall, Kerry Simmons, Edmund Hinkson, Ralph Thorne, the leader, what's his name? Ian Gudinejo. That's a 5 or 6. Those would be my top speakers that I would go anywhere to hear anytime because they think that they should present a persuasive and impactful case for the Democratic Labour Party, because you know you want to give balance to the east side. I would say the great explainer, the prime minister because they're very. I don't think he has it equal with the use of words in active politics today. The prime minister, Mr. Stinkton, who can weave a great political narrative. Steve Blackett, Stephen Lashley, Ronald Jones, Dennis Lowe, and Dennis Lowe. Those would be my top, unless it slipped by me, those are my top drawing cards, who we look forward to hearing his speech over the next several weeks. All right?
Oh, Dr. Esvick, man. Dr. Esvick?
Nah, he has not had enough practice. He has not been informed. He has not been playing any games, so he can't be selected. By my standards, I have not been hearing him. I don't know what form he's in. I know he's loud and boisterous and blustering, but you need more than that in it to make a serious political speech. And those persons I mentioned as my top attractions have the rescue skills of use of language, rhetorical skills, gravitas. I mean, gravitas and seriousness in which you can take them. The rhetorical skills, like I said, wit, humor, satire, whatever it's called for, to make a powerful political speech. But to me, those are the best person to want to listen to in public.
I suspect you may get a call soon from Mr. Dennis Kelvin.
No, I think that Mr. Kelvin is interesting. I used to enjoy my interactions with him at the program because he has a different way of thinking and he offers things that are not usually heard. And I used to enjoy trying to grapple with him and understand and get him to explain them. Right? But I think that, in a campaign, you need your message to be direct and clear and simply understood. So you do not want to have, despite the unique talents of Mr. Kelvin, have to spend days trying to figure out what he said. By then, the campaign would have moved on and it would lost his message. All right? So I'm looking forward to some. And I hope that very soon we start getting direct messages from the person. As I look back over my involvement in school of politics, I remember in 51 and 56, Granny Adams was about the right to vote, the universal debt suffrage, and democracy. Building the infrastructure and health and roads and schools and what. Mr. Barrack came with school. See, each campaign should have a couple of clear messages which would carry the campaign. We should give them a signature. Mm-hmm. In 1961, Mr. Barrack came with school meals and mm-hmm. school meals and free secondary education, etc. Mm-hmm. Further industrialization of the country. In 1976, Tom Adams came with the offshore sector, no tricks in 1976, etc. And that lasted for 10 years. In 1986, the Dems came with the $15,000. People talked about that. You need a phrase, a term, a policy that people talk about that defined the election. And you, like you said, like the caller said, and like the caller corrected you, otherwise I would have. It was a back raise that day, Mr.
We clarified that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I just made this point. It's a historical point, which I'm sure you appreciate. By that time, by the time the BLP had offered $12,000 tax free, the DLP offers $15,000. Mm-hmm. But I remember that when the Barbasdale Party came to power in 1996, Tom Adams took it from your first $96 in your pay part, $96, $24 a week was tax-free. Everything after 96 was you pay taxes on. And he took it, I think, to about $10,000 before he died or something in that region. So it shows you the progress that had been made in liberalizing and detaxing Barbadians then in that time. So I said that they talked 15,000 in 1994, and after talked about 30,000 jobs. That was on the words of everybody. So you need a clear message like that for people to repeat and say that would be their mantra. That would be the anthem around the rally in simple terms. And then I think in 2008, it was cost of living. And when after it was jobs, with 30,000 jobs, cost of living. And then there was corruption too. And maybe next time or some future, I would give a person a little history of how quote unquote corruption came about or emerged over the years in Barbados as regarding what is spoken about on the public platform and between and among the parties.
Okay, all right, Glenn, we have to take the regional roundup. Thank you for your participation. And
thank you very much. And thanks for accommodating me.
Okay, great. No problem.
Thank you.